This season of My First Dungeon is sponsored by Soul Muppet Publishing and their backer kit campaign for their latest game, Paint the Town Red. If you're a fan of My First Dungeon, then you know that we are even bigger fans of Soul Muppet Publishing, and we are thrilled to be working with them again as part of this campaign. Everything that Soul Muppet makes reminds us why it is that we love to play games and gets us excited to get back to the table. And with the combo of Zach Cox as designer and Johan Noor as art director, you know that Paint the Town Red is something special. Click on the link in our show notes below to back this campaign and to let Soul Muppet know that My First Dungeon sent you there. And with that, enjoy this episode from our season of Paint the Town Red.
In 6 days, your brother will turn. Will you open the door? The Time We Have is now live on BackerKit, a tragic two-player zombie TTRPG played on opposite sides of a closed door. Inspired by games like For the Queen, this game is contained in an 80-card tarot-sized deck that you can grab right now on our BackerKit campaign. The Time We Have is written and designed by Elliot Davis, with illustrations by Ripley Ash, editing by Samantha Lee, and the theme song you're hearing by Behold. So please head to sadzombiegame.com or search The Time We Have on BackerKit and help us make this game a reality. Thank you.
New York is a city where anything is possible. Where things thought living may really be dead, and people long dead may yet draw breath. But those infinite possibilities always come with a cost. Be it pain or sadness, uncertainty, or fear, that bill will always come due. But that doesn't mean you can't run from it. At least for a little while. A good party in New York City is a salve that can dampen almost any trouble. But those troubles are catching up with all of you very quickly.
But if we can't get ahead, then we're better off dead. So why don't we paint the town red? So why don't you paint the town red, honey? So why don't we paint the town red? Oh,
we're going to begin this session, as we did last time, with some consequences of the previous session.
Yuck, Brian.
Lovely.
I think we're going to be fine.
It's going to be great.
If I remember correctly, the last session ended with, oh yes, the destruction of an entire faction. A thing not really in the game necessarily.
Who did that? What the hell?
Who could have done that? Four consequences. We're going to look at the player with the most
most chaos.
Oh, so it's not?
Oh, it's most chaos.
Ooh, fuck. Yeah. Fuck. Shut up, guys.
I didn't want to say anything, but then Brian asked.
Oh, no. It's Savani.
Teacher. Teacher, you had a homework due today, right?
It is the highest chaos. I was going to be looking at Minnie, but actually I've got to look at Savali.
Mm-hmm. That's fucked up.
Savali, you have 11 chaos. For every 2 chaos, there is one of a number of consequences that could happen. The last couple times we've done this, we've rolled for it. Because this is a bit of a different circumstance in that one of the factions has been wiped from the map, I'm going to make this really simple. Savali, you wake up after a long night. You had a long conversation with Minnie, and Minnie revealed to you some hard truths about your state that maybe some other people have tried to relay to you, and maybe that you should have believed at this point after being a couple hundred, if not thousands of years old.
I just use lotion. What are you talking about? Just use lotion. That's the trick.
That's all.
You wake up and consider this long conversation you had. What is Savali thinking as the day begins to break and you have to cope with the fact that Minnie has revealed to you that you are undead?
It's been how many days? Two?
I think it's been, yeah, this is like kind of over the weekend.
Savali, I think the first day was like, you guys are punking me. This is just a joke. Just jerks, stupid idiots. And I think now is just like slowly settling in of like, all right, fine. If I'm a vampire, then that means like I want to do vampire things like drink blood and stuff. And I think it's like now like trying all of the vampire things slowly and steadily and being like, what the fuck?
You're trying out all the vampire things. I think you find yourself at you go to like various bars and you try port a bunch of different places and it keeps not tasting good. And I think you're slowly piecing together like, wait a minute, was that port? You try, what's another undead type thing you try?
I think, what's one of our banes or like the things that vampires can't do? It was...
It's drowning, breaking the skin with a pig bone, and of course, setting your shadow on fire, which...
Cool.
I think you've also been reckoning with the fact that you do not have a shadow.
Yeah, I think I'm going... I went to the doctor's office and was like, hey, can you like check me for my vitals and stuff? Haven't been here in years, actually, ever.
Hey, doc, shadow's gone.
My shadow's gone. About that?
Like, well, there's a circus in town.
Yeah.
you end up at a doctor's office, just like a walk-in clinic.
And I'm giving like my date of birth of like the actual date of birth. Like I've never been to the doctor because I've never needed it.
The doctor's kind of like, they're all kind of dealing with you. Like they're trying to push you off into a psych ward or something. But three doctors come by, all try to take your heart rate. Like they all put stethoscopes to your chest and nothing, they're not hearing anything. And the doctors keep getting really frustrated. Like, oh, Cindy, get me another one of these things. Just going through stethoscopes and they're not working. You luckily make it out of there before anything like crazy, before they try to, you know, lock you up in any kind of institution.
In Bellevue.
You go to the doctor. They don't really know what to do with you. You go to the library, try to research things for yourself. And while you're researching undead, you find a daily New York Times from that day. You flip through it kind of idly. You see sports section, you see arts section, you see undead section, you see classifieds. Wait a minute. You turn back and see an entire section written in inverted inks. Like the page is black and the writing is white.
Whoa.
And you see bylines by Nellie Blight detailing in gruesome detail the events that happened at Margino and Bain just a few nights ago. You read, and as you read, you realize that before Cain destroyed Margino and Bane, all of the factions were holding firm, waiting to see what would happen with this massive shift in the board. All chess players waiting to see what the next move would be. Now, with an entire player off the board, everyone is making their move at once, and New York has gone from scary to incredibly dangerous. You become immediately aware while you're reading that all five factions, all five remaining factions are aware of you and your friends. You, Savali, are named by name as being the person who like started the incident by making out with the court.
No.
You are described by name. Fitzroy is described a little bit. Minnie is mentioned as a absurd figure. Like, Minnie, you're portrayed very poorly by this person.
Perfect.
And Cain is made out to be exactly the kind of monster that could do this thing. Your consequences for these actions are that all of the other factions go from friendly to hostile like that.
Aw,
Damn.
No. No.
Ugh. Brian.
I don't understand why they would do that. I don't
Thanks,
get it.
Thanks, Kane. Come on.
We didn't even like them anyway.
It was just a little oopsie. Come on.
I was just roughing him up. You know, boys we boys, you know?
The Sixth Family, the Brokers, Tammany Hall, the Classical Archivists of Carnegie Hall, and Hudson, all of them have machinations in the works. That even Nellie Blight, the most impressive reporter at the New York Times Undead section, only has inklings of what is truly happening behind the scenes. Whether or not you fully believe you are undead or a vampire, I think you are incredibly aware of the danger that you have found yourself in.
Can only undead see the undead section?
Only undead can see the undead section. For everyone else, it looks like the comic section.
Does it say undead?
Oh, that explains that.
That's so funny.
The undead don't have comics.
Oh, Marmaduke.
Oh, reading this horrific newsletter and being like, oh, Marmaduke, is so funny.
Yeah. It's very strange when people encounter undead reading the undead section at like a coffee shop, because they'll be like freaking out and everyone will look over their shoulders and be like, family circus, what are you doing?
Garfield, Mondays aren't that great. Why are you so upset?
And Savali, as this realization hits you, I need your chaos to go to zero and your pulse is reduced down to 1d3. So go ahead and roll a d6, have it, and that's your new pulse.
I rolled a 6, so that's just 3 then.
As we move into the next phase of this game, it's all happening tonight. You guys spend the weekend lying a bit low, finding information, seeing how the world has changed with this sudden shift, not only for the undead community with this elimination of a faction, but also for New York at large after two of the worst days of trading in the stock market. Everyone in the city is scared. The uncertainty makes the stench of this city awful, miserable. Misery is all around, but there are still parties for the undead. For it's all happening tonight. Normally we do a little around the horn for each and every person. I'd love to do a little what's happening tonight with Fitz, Kane, and Minnie.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
As Savali is reckoning with this potential drastic shift to their identity and also the danger that they're in, what do you guys do to help Savali out?
Well, I got to make sure she looks good. So Minnie's going to take a little bit of a we'll call it like a makeover ambush, I think, is what we're going to do. We'll get all the supplies ready, and just when Savali's not paying attention, I'll just jump in there and get it ready.
Can Kane be involved in this and take, when you say ambush, take it very literally? And like, put a bag over Savali's head and drag them.
You know what? I've never really actually done one of these, so I think that looks fine.
I've done a lot of ambushes and kidnapping in my day, so I can get Savali to you quickly.
Yeah, perfect.
I can get Savali to you quickly. It's terrifying.
We're roommates.
I think when Savali least expects it, when they're out freaking out, trying to find more evidence on what and who they are, out of nowhere, a bag is put over Savali's head and they're dragged kicking and screaming to an unknown location, but which later becomes known when I put the bag off their head. And they're in front of the desk with many makeups and outfits that Minnie has set up.
Yeah, I got hair dye.
Kane, do me a favor, roll duplicity. With the upper hand.
Okay. Okay. I got a +1 for that. That is an 8.
8. Okay. Do you want to burn anything to get to 9? Or are you sticking with 8?
I take a chaos route to...
Take a chaos, yeah.
I'll take a chaos, yeah. I'll reroll.
Reroll whatever die you want.
Oh, that's better. That is 9. Yeah, 9 exactly.
Savali is walking out of the New York Public Library as you ambush them, put a bag over their head. Your chaos increased by sheer fact of the people. This is in the middle of the day. The people of New York freak out. As a priest with an eye patch just bags a woman and just cast cards her off.
Who? Hello?
Savali, you exit out onto Fifth Avenue, immediately have a bag thrown over your head, or pulled off to an unknown location. The bag is removed from your head, and you see a mirror in front of you with your visage with like light bulbs all around, like a makeup mirror. Minnie, go ahead and roll an allure check for me. I'll say also with the upper hand.
Thank you so much. That's going to be a 7.
7? Okay. Do you want to? 7 is a failure unless you want to reroll.
I would love to reroll.
You can take, one chaos for any die you reroll.
Yes. Ooh, 12?
12 is good.
Oh, yeah.
Savali, what kind of makeover do you find as Minnie starts to do your hair, do your makeup, dress you up in whatever fashion Minnie finds most desirable?
And I'm deciding what that fashion is.
Yeah, you can tell me what does Minnie do to Savali in this makeover ambush?
Minnie gives Savali a mohawk.
Yeah.
Turn into a full steampunk vampire.
Mm-hmm.
Real, you go from very, I don't know, demure to very mindful, very demure. That's really going to date this. Very mindful, very demure to edgy in the course of like 5 minutes.
How did you do that?
Really good at this. I don't know. I just, you know, I figure we got to try something big and new because this is a really big night.
Tonight's a big night?
Yeah.
Are you guys giving me my shadow back? Is that what's happening?
Oh, for sure. That's going to happen.
So this was a joke. You guys are punking me. That's what it is. Okay. Ha ha. Very funny.
We just got something special that we want to show you. And you just got to look really good, like real, real good for it.
You're gonna show me my okay. All right, yeah, totally. I'll go along. Ha ha ha! Show me something cool. All right.
As the sun starts to set, the makeover takes a little while. The ambush and the kidnapping and the makeover. You end up going to like deep Brooklyn for the makeover, and then find yourself on a train coming back into
Manhattan.
Why
did
Manhattan.
We go to Brooklyn?
You really went out of the way for like a really great abandoned warehouse.
We all live together. You could have just asked me to come with you, Kane.
Minnie said you were doing a makeup ambush, so I did the ambush part. Minnie did the makeup part.
I know I gotta choose my words more carefully, but it was still pretty fun.
Fitzroy, as the group makes it back to Manhattan, to the shared space you guys all live in, how does Fitzroy help Savali in this moment?
Fitzroy has been out walking. His usually wrinkled cream-colored three-piece is remarkably well-pressed. This is the smartest that he has looked in a very long time. But Savali is going to need something else for her makeover. Fitzroy has gone to speak with Donna Strazio about Savali's shadow.
You find yourself down in Chinatown as this makeover is happening in Brooklyn. You find yourself down in Chinatown on Doyer Street. You remove that grate directly in front of Nam Wan Tea Parlor and climb down into the sewers beneath Chinatown. And find yourself in Donna Strazio's lair, the bunker. And you see her sitting as Kane had encountered her before, in a very plush, plump chair, very nice side tables and tables set out in front of her with tea and biscuits and things. And a number of strapping young men, very doting women who are all walking around with various states of scars and damage to their person, having been encountered in the War of the Five Mortal Families and having been grabbed and drafted into the Sixth Family in their undeath, all of them walking around without shadows. You see Donna Strazio look at you and give a small welcoming nod and just kind of point to a seat in front of her.
Office hours are indeed open. Grab a seat. Would you like some tea?
I'm all right for tea. Thank you very much. I've come to, you have something that belongs to a friend of mine, and I want it back.
Yes, yes I do. I don't intend on giving anything back for free. I never do. And certainly not now, with all of the things your friend has put into motion. Firstly, they get my accountant killed. Secondly, they begin a domino chain which destroys an entire faction and, frankly, messes with my plans for this city. So, no.
Savali's the mastermind.
Is it just all hitting you?
Do people think I'm the mastermind? I just kissed him. This is so stupid. I'm the dumbest one. I was a vampire. Why am I in trouble?
You see Don Astrazio look at you, and you look behind Don Astrazio, and there is a corkboard with a number of like headshots with like daggers through them and various things like that, and like, you know, kind of like a string board all around the city, and there's a whole web network that is all leading to a picture of Savali.
Fitzroy just kind of looks over his shoulder, does a bit of a triple take, and just like,
well, in that case, you know, the nature of person that you are dealing with is someone who's not to be trifled with. So I would advise, look, and he shuffles forward a little bit. Are we on opposite sides of the desk?
Yeah.
Okay. He just sort of leans forward, and despite his, you know, pressed suit, he still looks very thin, kind of like this mangy cat, as he just leans forward. And
I've already said that I will sort you out an accountant. And look, if anything, Kane's somewhat rash decision has created a vacuum, which I'm sure you can take full advantage of. But I would ask that you give me that shadow, please.
I was so ready to make you roll duplicity with against the odds, but I think I backed myself into a corner where I have to let you roll with the upper hand. I really accidentally gave it to you.
Hell yeah. Hell yeah. Get him, Ed. Get this stupid GM.
That is a 10.
Woo!
10 beats a 9. You see Don Astrazio, her eyes flick over to a room off to the side. And you had seen this room as you walked in, mostly because everything in this underground kind of bunker is very cozy. It's surprisingly quaint. Yeah, I mean, it's still a sewer. It's like there's some dingy aspects to it, but everything that could be made cozy looks nice. And there's a room off to the side that is noticeably dark. And not just dark, but inky blackness. And you recognize what it is when you see near the top of the room, there's a large bar. And on that bar are a number of coat hangers. And slung over the coat hangers are dozens, hundreds, maybe even thousands of shadows, all carefully labeled and collated and off to the side in a room. And you see that room has a slight stench to it, a stench of gasoline. And you see a small switch near the side of Don Astrazio's desk that you know is a trigger to light a spark and destroy every single one of these shadows, should she so choose. Her army of people is held by a hair trigger. But she hears what you say. She looks at the corkboard off to the side. And you see, what you realize now is she is almost looking at the combination of Savali and Kane and you and Minnie as attempting to make a play to become a new faction of New York. Like, the level of chaos you guys have wrought puts you in that realm of, like, maybe this is a player on the map.
Mm.
And I think with that level of confusion, she balks at you for just a moment. I have not gotten to where I am by giving things away for free, no matter who I'm dealing with. So I'll make you this deal. I told your friend Kane that I'd wanted no part of his troubles when I first saw him. I don't think I want any part of your or Savali's troubles. But I came across this at great expense to me. And you see her kind of like flick her hand, and one of her minions, you recognize Seamus, who Kane had beaten up before, like still badly beaten up, grabs a coat hanger out of this thing and holds up a shadow and kind of like shakes it. And you recognize the vague visage of Savali's figure. This came to me at great expense, and I won't part with it for free. So if you make me whole before the markets open on Tuesday, I'm happy to give it to you. But I'm short an accountant. Without such, I will not have a part in this city. The movements of the brokers in Tammany Hall and Hudson are vast, and I need a piece of every bit of action, and if you can't find me a banker, an accountant with access to the undead trading floor, I'll be cut out of some of this city, and that cannot happen. So, make me whole. Find me an accountant and deliver them to me, so long as they can access the undead floors on the stock exchange, and you can have this shadow.
You know the three ways a vampire can die, right? Drowning, setting shadows on fire. Lovely thing about working in a bar is the catering. People fucking love pork chops. And he just very quickly reaches into his jacket and just brings out a pig bone and just rests it on her hand on the table. I'll get you your fucking accountant. But I'm not walking out of here without that shadow.
Holy fuck.
You see Don Astrazio look at you, look down, recognize what is happening here. There are two banes she worries about often. Shadows, she has vast control over. Drowning, she has to worry about because Hudson is such a powerful figure in the city. The third bane of this world is splitting their flesh with a pig's bone, a strange one that rarely is ever attempted, and yet here you stand. You see her fist clench. She doesn't move. You see Seamus look at you, recognize what's happening here. His mother, Don Astrazio, looks to him. Eyes flash over. She gives a small twitch of a head, and he walks over and hands you the coat hook with Savali's shadow.
Thank you. And just sort of awkwardly, not really sure what to do with it, just kind of like wraps it around his forearm, just awkwardly, sort of like, and just...
You see, Don Astrazio, as you, do you pull the pig bone away now that you have it?
it's still resting against her hand, still.
You see Donna Strazio snaps her finger with her free hand, and Seamus quickly runs off and procures for you like a small shopping bag and hands it to you.
Don't let anyone ever tell you I'm not polite.
Fitz just looks at her and... How many people have you seen die? Out of interest.
It's not a thing I care to count, really.
I do. I've seen thousands. And just putting the shadow into the shopping bag and just looking at Donna Strazio, just very, very truthfully says, I will get you your accountant. But stay the fuck away from me and mine. You understand?
She looks at you, gives you a small, kind of knowing, sad smile. She looks over at Seamus and a number of the shadows in the back wall.
A number of my boys were soldiers. I know what that can do to a person. Happy to take your credit.
And you see her eyes glance at your shoulder for a moment. And she gives another small smile and just says,
give Hudson my best.
And you glance at your shoulder and see, despite having gotten this suit pressed and cleaned for the first time in some time, there's still that little remnant of Hudson's spit that he spat back at you when you spat into him.
Fitz's eyes just look towards that, and he suddenly realizes that the hand with the pig bone is shaking, and he just immediately just turns and, not even saying another word, just immediately, just very quick step, walks out until eventually the air of New York hits him once more and he just... just begins to just... walk to where they agreed. Shopping bag in hand.
You walk through the hustle and bustle of Chinatown. The undead of New York City exist as a layer slightly offset from the rest of the city. You walk through streets with mortals unaware of who and what you are and what precious cargo you carry. They see a shopping bag and a pig's bone, not realizing that those are weapons to be wielded. And you walk north as we move from It's All Happening Tonight to tonight. As we begin to paint the town red, Fitzroy, you arrive back to see Savali made up, mohawked, and ready for a night out on the town. Where do you take everybody?
Well, everyone, this way, walk into Harlem. Just follow me.
You guys come out of St. Patrick's, hang right, and walk north. You walk for a long time. You guys probably should have taken the subway, but you're like, ah, it's still brisk. Let's walk up. And you walk up through Central Park and up towards the top of the park and past it, past Morningside, to the 125th Street subway station.
Jesus. Wow, we walked a long way to get my shadow. Ha ha.
Oh, yeah, speaking of, happy, and Fitzroy looks at Kane and Minnie, and, I mean, do we all want to say it?
Yeah, well, we were just, we're all really proud of you for, you know.
For what?
Finally, you know, understanding that you're...
undead.
Sure.
Ha, you got me. Ha, I'm undead. I'm I'm a vampire. Right? Ha, ha. Yeah, totally.
Kane looks between Minnie and Fitzray like really confused. It's like, she is. Did she not? You are a vampire.
You made me walk all the way to Harlem to tell me that and give me my. You got me. You guys got me good. You got me. You got my ass.
Well, first night of. Well, we in the past have enjoyed making a big song and dance about it. I don't know about you Old Testament types, but I know with Minnie it was quite the night.
Best night.
And, feels like, well, yeah. And anyway, I got you a little something, Savali. And once again, just reaching into this shopping bag brings out this... a coat hanger that's just wrapped in this vaguely translucent, like, black shawl thing, and just, might need to stretch it out a little bit, but, there you go.
How do you guys even do that? You put it on, thank you. I think it, like, reattaches me to me in, like, the same way of, like, the, like, it looks disgusting. Like, my body is, like, making a bunch of, like, cracking, like, weird contortions. Like, it just looks like I'm being possessed by a demon. I, like, make, like, a weird gurgling noise. And then I'm, like, all together now.
Hey.
The shadow briefly gets reattached hands to feet. And all of a sudden, Savali, like, inverts and freaks out. And, like, head is coming out of butt. And there's this whole madness. And then, like, the shadow kind of readjusts. And you see, a mother and her little like child walk by and she goes, just ignore them, honey, just ignore them. And your shadow reattaches and slowly uncrumples, and yet your body kind of like mimics the shadow as the two of you become two entities and then slowly morph back into one thing.
Holy shit, that feels crazy.
Well, I'm now your outfit is complete. It's a lovely look, hair and...
Guys, thank you so much. This is so nice. I bet you guys were just like, I feel left out because I'm the only undead one in the group. So you pulled this whole elaborate stunt to get my shadow stolen. I like, you guys stopped my heart for a second. That was, I don't know how you did that. Doctors can't even figure out how you did that.
You went to the doctors?
Yeah, I went to the doctors. But you paid Nelly to write that crazy article about me being this head honcho person and everyone hates me. This is crazy. Hey,
what are you talking about?
I pull out the report and I give it to you guys.
You guys see this, stunningly accurate and also very damning portrait of the four of you, all referenced by name. Not in a flattering way at all. And positioning you guys as a potential new faction, or at least as the people who destroyed Margino and Bane. And as you begin to read this and attempt to flip the page, all of a sudden, a subway comes into the station and blows the paper out of your hand. It clatters down the tunnel as the V line pulls in to the station.
real quick, can I grab Savali's hands?
Hey.
Girlfriend, I know that this is really hot.
Yes.
And it's going to get a lot easier in like just a couple minutes.
What?
But you gotta come to terms with it, okay? And I'm going to take her hand that I have in mine and I'm going to kind of like shove it up into Minnie's own neck.
What are you doing?
For her to feel the nothing that is not throbbing against my skin.
Minnie, I...
Same thing happening to you, and I'll take her other hand and put it to her own neck.
Savali sits there, goes, no, this is... No, come on, guys. Fitzroy, come on. You guys...
It's true. It's...
Kane, come on. You're doing a great job acting, man. Yeah.
Savali, you know I don't. I never joke with you specifically.
That is true. You never joke with me specifically. And I try really hard to get you to joke. And I would...
Look, I get it. Like, Sometimes I wish this wasn't the case anyway. I wish it wasn't. Sometimes I wish that this was not reality, but it is. And, you know, when I get past that, those little moments, this is better.
So, the reason
Stand clear of the closing doors, please.
We should hurry.
Yeah, come on.
We should, yeah. And you see Fitzroy just kind of glance at Minnie a little bit before. All right, come on, let's hop the turnstiles. Come on.
You guys all rush into the subway as the doors are closing. You, like, hold the doors open and, you know, a couple people get mad at you. You find yourself in a subway car, on the V line heading south down Manhattan. The train starts to pick up speed pretty quickly. It, like, really has some giddy up to it. And you look around and you see a couple of seats open. You guys grab, like, four seats altogether. And there are a bunch of very, like, dry-looking men all in black or charcoal suits with, like, gray fedoras and, like they're all reading newspapers at the same time. Very dull, drab space. And Savali, you're looking around, you're kind of keep feeling the lack of pulse in you, like trying to feel your heartbeat just in your body.
I stole a stethoscope and it's in my ears and I'm trying to find my heartbeat.
As that happens, you hear one of the carriage doors open up, like the interconnecting doors between subway cars, and a person walks in a white, an all-white tuxedo with a white top hat and a, like, ivory white cane with a golden handle. Like one of those canes that doesn't have a hook to it. It's just like a straight bar down that somehow feels more, I don't know, cool in that way. It's like, how does that help you? You got to have the hook part, but they don't. Comes over to you and looks at you and goes, I understood there was going to be a party here tonight. You know who it's for?
We all point, all of us, at Savali. Yeah. And I think if Savali's still got that stethoscope in her ear, I'm going to grab the little sensor end of it and just go, thump, thump. Ah! And pull it out of her ears.
You thump, thump, pull the stethoscope out of her ears.
Give me that back.
You see the woman in this tuxedo reaches into her pocket, grabs a crimson lipstick and uncorks it, puts it to your forehead and draws a big V on your forehead, stands up at attention, clacks her cane twice, and immediately all of the drab people in this car throw off their clothes and immediately confetti, balloons, flowers, everyone is wearing purple and pink and white and yellow and green, and it's a assault of colors and fun and excitement as all of a sudden streamers and balloons go off, party blowers go off. Happy turning day!
Happy turning day, Savali.
Wait a minute. There's no V train?
I thought you'd figure that out.
You wouldn't know this, Savali, but Fitz and Minnie and Kane have all partied here before. The Veen train is the only train in New York that services all five boroughs, running express. All you have to do is enter it at midnight at the 125th Street station. It goes in circles around all five boroughs. Yes, Chinook, even Staten Island.
Even Staten Island? My little home?
Yeah.
And if there is a party in New York worth going to, it is this one. You see all of the cars start, like, exploding into color and fun. A player piano comes out, and it seems like a ghost is playing on a piano. The woman who's in front of you, Gladys Bentley, this boisterous big figure just looks out and goes, everybody, we've got to celebrate this new person. Stand up, miss.
It's me. I died today, everybody. That was me. I'm dead.
She grabs like a ring announcer in a boxing match. A microphone descends from the ceiling, like 3 feet above her, and she holds the microphone. He goes, "All right, we've got a new undead with us today. Let's introduce them, make them feel really warm and welcome. Tell us your name, honey."
Hi, Savali is my name.
Savali, give it up for everybody!
That's yes. Awesome.
Yes, thank you. Cheer for me, yes.
And you know what that means, everybody? That means hugs and high fives and kisses and drinks all around. Let's make her feel really, really welcome in Undead. Songs play up. You see a hot dog vendor comes up who is a living embodiment of a dirty water dog and is giving away free hot dogs to everybody. This is Hot Dog, who is always outside any party worth having.
I love him.
A Fool's Errand is a tarot-fueled science fantasy game set in a post-calamity world of androids, humans, and all those in between. Build your fools and explore realms both waking and subconscious. But the more powerful you get, the more the major arcana gods will take notice and rain down their love and rage as both boons and calamities. Every calamity dreams its successor. The world approaches its next big oops. So, fool, will you deny these jealous gods? Back A Fool's Errand right now by visiting www.afoolserrandgame.com. Your errand awaits.
Hey there, it's Elliot from the Many Sided Media team. In addition to playing and producing here on My First Dungeon, I'm also a game designer, known for such games as Something Is Wrong with the Chickens, a rules-like game of chickens, eldritch horror, and revenge. Project Echo, a solo time travel game played in the pages of a planner. And the upcoming Rom-Com Drama Bomb, a three-player game of meet cutes and mayhem. If you like weird and unique games and want to bring something new to your table, head to moreblueberries.shop and use code MYFIRSTDUNGEON for 20% off your order. That's MOREBLUEBERRIES.shop. Thanks!
Savali, I want to start with you. This is the best party in New York. It is the well-known to be one of the best running parties. A lot of drag, a lot of over-the-top outfits. Pretty much the dress code here is more. And everyone is taking that into account. Tell me, what do you see here that excites Savali?
Like, I can see across like all the subway cars.
You are being like led through the various cars by Gladys, who's like introducing you to a bunch of people, like really trying to make you feel welcome in this entirely undead space. It's really like taking you into a new space and being like, all right, and here's this person. Like, let's make sure you have a lot of friends. And it's like very gregarious and fun and knows everybody by name and every single story that they have.
I think there's a like one car that's just like a river of it's like a river of blood, but I think the gang has like told whoever the river guy to call it a river of port in my honor.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
A river of port running through. Yeah, this is there's a bunch of different cars. All of them kind of have themes. This one is very clearly Willy Wonka, but it's the most fucked up Willy Wonka you've ever seen.
Yeah. The sign is just like duct taped over and has a port. Yeah.
Very, you Willy Wonka is scary as is, which is really funny. So like,
there's a part in the car that's just like the Gene Wilder movie version where they go into the tunnel and it's scary. It's just exactly that. It's Gene Wilder's there and it's just doing that scene.
Gene Wilder's Kanoki undead.
Is Gene Wilder a vampire?
Yes.
He is now.
Yes.
You see this river of port. Gladys grabs a champagne goblet, just dips right into it, hands it to you, and goes, what do you think about a little AB negative? Is that a blood type? Sure.
I, swirl it, smell it, let the
tannin run? Settle?
I don't know. And then I take a sip and I'm like, that's some good aged AB negative. How old was this?
It's kind of a blend here. We don't really have single vintages here.
We couldn't get enough out of one person, so we just kind of
it's a river, honey. Like I don't know what you want.
You're right. I'm getting used to this vampire thing. I'm so sorry. Just died today, folks. Just died today.
We'll get you a single malt. Don't you worry. And she continues like taking you all around this space. I just want to hear one thing from everybody. Let's expand the space. What else is in here that is magnificent? Fitz, why don't you tell me what's something in here that you see that is right up Fitz's alley?
Honestly, the piano. There's a strange nostalgia that comes with it, and despite the ostentatious, like the river, the feathers, the sequins, the colors, it is just this piano that appears to be playing itself with its ghostly instrumentalist, but more even than this, cutting through everything. It's Minnie.
Minnie, what are you doing in this space, having Fitz's eyes on you, whether or not you recognize it?
Minnie is having the time of her life, just soaking things up, and is totally unaware that she's being witnessed in this. But right now she's watching, there are these dancers doing tricks on the poles that go in between like the center line of all the cars, and they are just magnificent. And so Minnie's got like herself, she's leaning over one of the seats and like trying to get people to watch them, and is totally enamored, drinking every drink that goes by, like just chatting with every person that goes by, and like trying to make sure Savali is having fun. And like every time Savali walks by, is just like making sure there's a drink in her hand, and making sure she's seen everything, and just soaking this up. This is the best part.
This is the subway where Showtime was invented, where people are like dancing on the poles and like flying, doing clips and crazy stuff. This is where it all started. And it is probably exclusively true of this train that everyone is into it. That is not true anywhere else in New York.
No.
But here, every single person doing flips and tricks and dancing on the poles of the V line has found their people, and they're all fucking great at it.
Yeah.
And Kane, what's something in here that Kane is enamored with, is really falling in love with?
I think I would describe what's in here, but I think because of fairly obvious reasons, Kane's a bit too distracted to be enamored. But I think that there's just fully an orgy cart. It has a cart that's just orgy.
Oh, yeah.
100%.
Oh, yeah, the orgy cart.
And that's for a moment, he thinks back to Sodom and Gomorrah, the good old days, the good, like one of the best places, the Orgy Shatim as well. Mm-hmm. But I think almost immediately, I think he catches his reflection in the window. He wears his eye patch. It's a customized eye patch that allows the flower that's growing out of his eye to seem more like a decoration of the eye patch rather than like actively growing out of his eye. And he looks in, when he looks, sees the reflection, he sees that the petals have turned black ever since that day when he wiped out a faction and realized the existence, the fact that his brother is still alive. And I think that's just, he's just kind of lost in thought, kind of staring out in the blackened window at the reflection, thinking about him and what they should do about it, and if the feelings they feel right now, if they should follow those instincts, those urges.
You look into the orgy cart, and I think you have a bit of a hipster moment where you're like,
That's not, I've seen orgies. It's like, that's cute, but.
That's real cute.
You see Savali in there just watching. Just watching.
Yes. Hey. I mean, watching he's is like, enough.
Shoving you.
No. No. No.
I really like Kane being able to literally say, like, I was doing orgies before they were cool.
I actually invented orgies.
I saw them when it was like still on bootleg, man. Before they sold out, before they went all corporate. You see Savali watching the orgy and all these people just like having fun and being free and being themselves. And this is a car of people that there are many undead spaces where people are very free, but this is one where it feels almost sacred in a way that you recognize being around churches. Whether or not you believe in it, you know that some people feel that way about it, that space. This has a similar feeling. It's debaucherous and it's over the top and it's fun, but it's sacred. It's safe. It's a space to be occupied by these people. And Savali's introduction to it is a joy. It is exciting for everyone else there to induct someone into this space and allow them into it. And there's a good feeling in that for everybody. I think even through the darkness that you're feeling, you feel a little twinge of that. And as you're looking through this just like writhing sea of bodies, you see your reflection in the black mirror of a window. And as the subway car goes through a tunnel, a number of lights inside the tunnel illuminate things. You get kind of like a strobe light effect. And through the bodies, you see a picture off on the far side of the car, a poster that has been hung up where you can advertise on the subway. And it just says, "For NYC mayor, no one else is able." And you see the picture of your brother. You feel that thrall, that pull of that hypnotic ink that you as an undead are aware of, but still feel. And you also see all over it from a number of different colored lipsticks are kiss marks. Savali may or may not be involved, but if nothing else, you can say your brother is hot. And a bunch of people in the orgy car are down with giving some kisses to the poster.
You look back into the orgy room, Savali's kissing the poster.
Kane just grits their teeth and leaves the orgy car. Just returns and walks out.
It's really tough to ruin the orgy car, but...
I think as Kane is walking out, I think Fitzroy similarly, still fully clothed and just leaning to one side. And I think just seeing Kane just... "You put a lot of eyes on us."
"Yeah. I'd apologize, but I'm not sorry. I did what I needed to do."
"I didn't ask you to apologize."
"You went to one of the factions. I assume they're one of the ones who took the Valley Shadows. You went on your own?"
I did, yeah. I knew tonight was going to be special, so figured, you know, what's the worst that can happen, right?"
"I think we both know what the worst could have been."
"You think you're going to kill him then?"
"Every fiber of my being wants to end him. It's taken everything in me right now not to punch a hole through the wall of this train. Right where that face is."
"Yeah, but we're having a party, aren't we? We should be happy, right?"
"These parties haven't made me happy in a very long time."
"Yeah, I know what you mean." "Can I ask you a question? Have you ever turned anyone? Have you ever made them what we are?"
"No."
"Yes." Fitzroy, you hear a grumbling that starts from your shoulder and emanates from the blood river
and emanates from every bit of water in this space. It echoes everybody. Everybody ceases their movements, their joviality, as the word "yes" echoes.
What?
Oh no.
Oh no.
Whoa. Is that God?
I sure hope not.
I think Fitz immediately just like almost suddenly that hand shaking once more just immediately just takes the jacket off instinctively and just chucks it as far to the other side of the carriage as he possibly can, just sort of really pressing himself back up like a cat scared.
You chuck your coat to the far side of the carriage and it flies directly into the hand of a person. The person grabs it, lowers it down, and Kane, you are face to face with your brother.
Oh, shit.
From Abel's eyes, there are tears running that no human body could possibly produce this much liquid. You see a moisture coming through this very fine three-piece suit. You see a beautiful face moistened and blackened a bit by the Hudson River.
Not moistened.
God. I just take a point of damage, just emotional damage, I think, just
in this. Yeah.
We all take emotional damage.
You see your brother look at you, eyes familiar yet a little bit unfamiliar, and you hear his voice. Long, almost forgotten. You'd forgotten your brother's voice. All you had remembered was the sound of a crushing skull. That was all you got to keep of him. You hear the voice and immediately remember it, and that voice is tinged as well with Hudson. That gurgling, deep...
You don't think your actions have consequences?
I knew the consequences of my actions, or I thought I...
You thought wrong. You thought you killed me. No, you killed me, and you created me.
You flash back to the moment where you smashed a rock into your brother's head. Your brother fell where he stood and tumbled into a body of water, clean and crystal shimmering. The first blood to stain a body of water, the first bit of pollution in a body of water, was tinged with the first murder in the history of this world. You see it in a bit of your memory that the water itself almost reacted. You were hearing that sound of the crushing skull over and over. How could you have possibly seen this little twinge of something that was so pure forever contaminated with your rage and your hate and your brother's blood?
You think your actions only affect those you touch. No. So much more. They ripple. If anyone knows about that, it's certainly me. And you must remember that water always wins. It is patient. It is slow. And it is never ending.
You feel your feet begin to get wet as everyone in the car realizes as this train is barreling through Brooklyn, the tunnel it is in is beginning to flood.
The second I see water, my drink is down, and I'm getting Fitzroy by the hand.
Fitz is just looking at the water and seems remarkably calm. This is almost like the shock his system needed as he just looks around at all of the water flooding through the car and just feeling your hand just... Are you okay? Are you okay?
I'm fine. We're not staying here, though. Not with this.
No. Get Shivali. Kane? Kane?
Everyone in this car is gone to Kane. It's just Kane and Abel here right now.
Savali, girlfriend, this isn't part of the party, so we gotta bounce.
Savali just shows up and like has gotten to like the cocaine blood, like the blood of coke people.
Yeah.
Cocaine. Yeah. And is like hyped up and is like, you know, I am looking at Abel, is like way hotter in the poster. Like what's up with that? Like what's that's crazy.
Mm-mm.
What'd I say? Why is everyone stopped?
The world around you fades out as you are locked in a moment with your brother. The world around you does not exist. You don't feel your feet. You don't hear the sounds of this car. For a moment, you might not even hear that ever-present crushing of a skull that has been your heartbeat for these millennia. But you see your brother and you hear just him as he just breathes a ragged breath. Why?
I'm so funny.
You know, he's right.
Yeah.
Drac, you got to explain.
Yeah, I'm with Abel on this one, actually.
Please
defend the villain of the Bible.
Solve this religious debate right here, right now,
everyone,
Drac.
Everyone is wondering.
Oh my god, okay. Hold on, I need to get in a serious headspace. So.
Why? Just... Why?
It was just constant, Abel. No matter what I did, you were always the one to be chosen. By our parents, by God, everything I did was not good enough. For anyone. I had to live up to you.
You couldn't be happy for me? You couldn't be happy in my success? Celebrate along with me? Be my brother? I'm not my brother's keeper? I didn't ask you to be. I never asked for that.
I was angry and I lost it. I don't know what else to say. I didn't mean to kill you. I didn't even know that was... I didn't know I could kill you. We just left the garden. Death wasn't a thing.
You feel the water around your ankles, like just a little bit of reality creeping into this moment outside of time. You feel it still rising, but you recognize this is not a thing that is happening deliberately. This is a external reaction. This is a flood of emotion that is happening right now, becoming a literal flood into this tunnel. I think in this moment you very distinctly recognize that Abel or Hudson or whatever this entity is not actively trying to do this. It is a flood of emotion that is coming from them. You see just Abel, there's that tinge of Hudson, whatever this combination, this amalgam of these two spirits is coming through, and you're trying to put that to bay.
but it's faltering. You were my... We were brothers. That meant something. That still means so much. It could have meant everything. We could have defined it together. We could have made the world anything we wanted to be. Instead, you made us this. You made yourself this. You made me this. I never asked you to be anything else. I hoped you wouldn't ask me to be anything else, and instead you chose for the both of us.
I do regret it. Okay? I regret lashing out like that. I wish I'd known what would happen if I lashed out like that. I haven't stopped hearing the sound since that day. I thought it was divine punishment, and maybe it is, but I haven't stopped thinking about it. I couldn't even drown it out. I have so many screams in my head of every single person I've killed in the hopes that it will drown it out, but it never does.
I want you to go ahead and make a check for me. I'm going to say you're going to be rolling against the odds in truly the most against the odds that could possibly exist in this game. tell me, what are you rolling with here?
What am I trying to do? is this like convincing? Like, what's this check for?
I mean, I think this is kind of convincing him that you are true, getting through to him, whether that is through the passion of your words, which is maybe savagery, maybe through the honey of your lips, which is maybe allure, maybe through giving him what he wants to hear, whether or not you believe it, maybe duplicity.
Is the space we're in right now, is this almost like mental, I guess for like a better term, mind palace? I would like to show my thoughts, like share what I've been hearing, what I remember with Abel.
Sure. Go ahead and take 5 chaos.
Yeah. I'll roll. I think I'll roll savagery as I open up and fill this space with the thousands upon thousands upon thousands of screams of Cain's victims, and then the sound of the crushing of a skull that even drowns that out, no matter how much more is added to it. I rolled 2 sixes and a 2, so I just draw one of the sixes, and our plus 2, so that's a 10.
Fill this void out of time, out of space. You, for a moment, glance around and recognize this space exists. It's not a mental space. This isn't a cute narrative device. This is a moment that is existing out of time. You feel a twinge of the divine around it. Maybe a chance for reconciliation, maybe a chance for understanding, maybe a chance for Old Testament revenge. You fill this space with your life. All of these screams that you use to try to drown out the one mistake, the one true mistake of your life. And you see Abel feel every last bit of that. Cain, I guess I just want to know, are you truly sorry? Do you truly regret your action, or deep down, did you always really want that?
Deep down, and he's only just coming to admit it, but deep down it was his greatest regret, and he's always considered it that. But that's what he was. He was a living mistake and just chose to accept it. But I think seeing the victim of his mistake in front of him, he can't pretend like he's okay with what he did and what he's been through since then. He truly is sorry for killing his brother.
You see the face of Abel begin to tense and tighten as he hears all of the cacophonous screams and just a life lived with this knowledge that you are forsaken by everyone, including the divine. He feels the weight of that penance that you have made, and you see his eyes close and open again with tears running down them, not of Hudson, but of his own making. You see a twinge of blood red in those tears, a bit of pain, as these are the deepest and most painful tears he could possibly shed. He is choosing in this moment to let it go. You feel the edges of this space begin to almost flicker in and out of existence as the aura of the divine that is wrapping around you is beginning to fade. You feel the screams around you that you're projecting into this space begin to fade, and they fade. As they fade, you hear that crushing skull over and over fade with it. You see your brother across from you, his own tears falling down his face. He goes, Can we just be brothers?
Cain just hugs him. I think just pulls him into a hug.
Abel hugs you back, pulls you in very deep. You feel the warmth of brotherhood in a way that has not existed truly in this world in millennia, that died with Abel. That new flame in the world ignites for but a moment until you feel a jet of water fly between the two of you and wash you each to either side as this realm of the divine shatters around you as you are all flooded off to either sides. Abel is wrapped up in a like whirlpool of dirty Hudson water and it's beginning to be pulled back through various train cars as a face of a water elemental of the Hudson River, this true dirty pollution element, comes directly up to you.
Well, I will never forgive you.
And it begins to envelop you and fill the car. Your brother is pulled out into the distance in this cocoon of water. The light that was between the two of you is extinguished, at least for now. That small bit of heat, that small bit of light being coming into New York City, gone. Maybe never to be rekindled, because you had to apologize to two people, Abel and Hudson. You feel like the spirit of Hudson begin to pull out of this space as just the water continues to rise.
I would like to, I know that there was like a sort of vignette situation happening, but did we all actually witness that conversation? Mm. Did we see that take place?
I think you witnessed a, like, aura around these two. This was a moment that was left between the two of them. Okay. This was a moment of divine intervention in the most literal sense, allowing them a moment of solidarity.
Perfect.
Hudson begins to retreat. The spirit itself begins to retreat. The water is still rising. And you hear just a chuckle come out from all around you, even through the intercom of the train.
I'm your brother's keeper now.
Was that your dad? Who is that?
No.
I'm not sure I like that guy.
No. You all need to get out now.
And you coming with?
Wait, but it's my party. We have to, we keep drinking. And look, I found the cocaine port.
Oh,
and...
bring it. Well, okay. Yeah.
Is the water still actively rising?
The water is now at like belly button. It's like rising up.
Okay, cool.
We can just drink it. Wait, it's water? No. Wait, it's water or blood?
Totally. Absolutely. Just bring it with us. We'll bring the party somewhere else. The party goes where we go.
I need to go and I need to go after Abel.
No. No. Remember, what's the worst that can happen, right? Done.
Kang, we get out together, please?
Pitchway, get Minnie and Sibali out of here. And I'm going to just charge down the train after Abel.
Go ahead and roll me a savagery check. This is just like pure running through stuff. I gotta give it to you against the odds. This is the full force of the Hudson River coming in here.
I am gonna use one pulse and activate my power of undeath in human strength to give myself the upper hand, which just cancels out the...
Oh, excellent. Okay. So you, with the upper hand against the odds, cancels out. You're just rolling 2d6 straight. You gotta beat 9.
It's a 12.
Whew. You barrel through this water and then... deep breath, swan dive into this and exit the car into just tunnel. You were not paying attention to where you were at in the city. You're pretty sure you're somewhere in Queens right now, but you have no idea where you are between stations. You have no idea how much time there is with still air left in this tunnel, but you go. You commit to this line of action. I need a decision now from Fitz, Minnie, and Savali. Are any of you following or are you going to escape? This is the only time you can choose to follow or escape.
Minnie is taking one look at that water. She tried. She tried. He's not going. I'm pushing Fitzroy and grabbing Savali by the hand. We're moving the other way.
Fitz doesn't move. And just looking at the rising water... and feeling this familiar sensation in the back of his throat. Is it water? Is it soil? Whatever it is, it's choking. But he looks at the water. Happy turning day, Savali. And is just going to jump into the water and try no. and follow.
Ah, oh, fuck.
Savali's pretty drunk and goes, oh, I forgot to... she goes, oh, I have to... I have to see if Kane wants the top bunk or the bottom bunk night. Let me go ask him, and then jumps into the water.
Savali, fine. I'm walking. I'm not diving into anything. Bastards.
I'm walking is insane.
That's so funny. I love the image of Minnie just standing there.
Yeah, Minnie, everyone else, Kane, this magnificent epic dive in. As Kane dives, their body almost seems to get like bigger and bulkier, and these massive arms and legs, they're beginning to swim towards the one thing that they care about, barreling through this tunnel in Hudson River water. Fitz immediately dives after them, feeling compelled to go after Kane and Hudson and Abel, and is going through this suit is getting soaked, but it kind of fits. Like Fitz always kind of has this slightly drowned look and almost looks in his element for a moment. Savali looks after and just goes, eh, fuck it, and follows after. Surprisingly, Savali, pretty good swimmer, doing a lot of backstroke. Where everyone else is doing, but I guess, you know, in this thing, as you know, the water level is rising, the backstroke is probably good, you're getting more air. Minnie just trudges, just crosses her arms, stomps one foot, and then trudges out of the back of this as the water level is rising and rising.
I had meant to say that when the party had started, Minnie took off her regular dress to reveal a tinier dress. So she's very aerodynamic right now.
Yes.
Extremely aerodynamic.
Yeah.
You're essentially wearing a modern day one-piece swimsuit.
Yeah.
There's a little bit of a flare at the end, but not much.
Savali's mohawk is ruined, by the way.
Damn it.
Savali's mohawk is ruined. You guys begin to barrel through this tunnel. Before we end this episode, Kane has already succeeded on his check. I am going to need each of you to roll a similar check. You can choose savagery, allure, duplicity. You just got to tell me how you're doing it. All of you will roll against the odds as you are fighting the might of the Hudson River to try to make it upstream in a flooding subway tunnel with no knowledge of where the next station is to rescue Abel. Fitz, since you dove in first, what kind of check are you making?
I think an allure check. And I think as he's occasionally just coming up for air and just going back underwater occasionally, he just, as he comes up above the water, his messy blonde hair, just kind of slicker than it's ever been. He looks quite good, actually. But as he comes above the water, he just starts to just spit into the water and just like, all right, come on, show me where you're fucking going.
Go ahead and roll your check, and I'll tell you what Hudson says.
That is... that's a 9 exactly.
You begin swimming. You spit into this dirty Hudson River water. You see, like, trash is floating by. You see blood from the Blood River has begun seeping into this area. You spit into it, and you hear Hudson echo back from around this tunnel.
Don't tease me like that.
As he says that, you see a small bead of like the spirit entity of this water, and you begin to follow that. So you have a little bit of a clearer idea of where you need to go and how fast and things. And you beat feet to try to keep up with this thing. Savali, you dove in next. What kind of check do you want to make?
I think Savali's drunk, so... she's probably going to do an allure check because that's her worst stat. And can I roll with... what's the disadvantage one? Not
against the odds?
Oh, against
you're
the
definitely
odds.
Rolling with against
yeah,
the odds.
Against the odds. Okay, cool. Fuck. I rolled a 4, 6, and a 5.
So get rid of the 6 and you still got 4, 5. That's 9.
Yeah. It still passed drunkenly.
How do you use allure to begin to chase Hudson down this tunnel?
After I hear the whole like spitting, don't tease me bit, I'm like, there's an orgy happening. I got to see this orgy. And I'm just chasing those sweet, sweet orgy vibes.
Sweet orgy vibes.
Savali, having fully missed the implications of this divine cocoon that Cain and Abel were put in, and even missed like the initial revelation that Abel was on the train.
Yeah.
Is just following the party, fully believing this to be still the good time. Mm-hmm. As like Gladys is trying to get everyone back. Like, no, guys, this way, there's a station right over here. You begin to pump through this tunnel looking for the continuation of this party.
I think Saval even missed that Cain and Abel are brothers. Still just on the way. Really.
Yes. The leader of the new sixth faction of New York City. You continue swimming down this tunnel as it slowly fills with more Hudson River water. Minnie, you stomp and are a little bit upset about it, but you eventually stomp out of the back of the subway car and walk into the tunnel. What kind of check are you making?
Minnie's pissed. Minnie's so pissed. Minnie's so mad that we finally got Savali to accept what's happening. This was supposed to be a nice celebration. Kane's got bullshit. I get it. We've all got bullshit. Fitzroy's not dying over anybody's bullshit. And Minnie is just like a pure ball of rage as she walks through. And so she's going to roll a savagery.
As I want to be very clear, everyone else is swimming. Minnie is walking.
Yeah.
She's just walking.
I'm walking here.
She's walking here. Thank you. God. I got a 10.
Got a 10? Mm-hmm. With against the odds?
No. I got a 9 against the odds.
Still ties a 9, so you're still good. Minnie, you funnel your anger and your rage and a certain amount of wrathful care for Fitzroy into kicking off your very nice shoes, hiking up your dress that is easier to walk, and trudging through this subway tunnel, one foot after the other, refusing to be slowed down by something as trivial as fucking water.
Yeah, what is bullshit, famously.
This entire time, everyone has been telling Minnie that New York is over. New York is dead and dying. And in this moment, Minnie more embodies the spirit of a New Yorker than anyone who has ever lived.
I just want to point out that the rats are running the other way. I'm following you, idiot.
As this tunnel continues to fill, you begin to move quickly through and towards some unknown destination. And I think that's where we will end this penultimate episode of Paint the Town Red.
Brian, I was just about to kick your ass, man. Come on.
Drag.
Me? I told everyone to leave.
Imagine that ultimate cut, just all of us going, okay, after party?
We will see how this particular party ends in the finale of my first dungeon, Paint the Town Red. Till then, everybody. Bye-bye.
Bye.
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 I'm a vampire.
No.
Savali's been saying they're a vampire this whole time in the outro. This season of My First Dungeon is sponsored by Soul Muppet Publishing. Paint the Town Red is now crowdfunding on BackerKit. Use the link in our show notes to let them know that My First Dungeon sent you there. My First Dungeon presents Paint the Town Red features the voice talents of Brian Flaherty, Super Dylan, Chinook Tissera, Draconix, and Edward Spence. This episode was produced by Elliot Davis and Abby Hepworth. Editing and sound design by Brian Flaherty. The theme song, Paint the Town Red, was written and performed by Jay Stroutman. This episode featured music by Behold and additional music from Artlist.io. My First Dungeon is a Many-Sided Media production. To hear the cast talk back for this episode, plus additional bonus actual plays, visit us on our Patreon. And remember, if you're having fun, you're already doing it right.
If you're hearing this, that means you listened to every last second of this episode. If you're not caught up yet, that's great, because then there's plenty more to listen to. But if you are caught up and you simply can't wait for the next episode, then you should head on over to patreon.com/myfirstdungeonpod and become a member of the Dice Pool. For just a few bucks a month, you'll get cast talkbacks, original games, and a full-length bonus actual play each and every month. As of the end of 2023, there is already over 20 hours of bonus audio, plus a whole bunch of other goodies to enjoy. So head on over to patreon.com/myfirstdungeonpod and jump into the Dice Pool. We'll see you there.